Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined by Kevin Zimmerman. Breaking news, free agency edition. The Suns have signed Jay Crowder to a three-year, $30 million deal, also known as the full mid-level exception. Kevin, good business. I enjoy it. What are your thoughts?
It's pretty much what we thought they would do. Just obviously you don't have that big money to spend. And guys like Gallinari got paid. Christian Wood got paid. Who's the other dude? Jeremy Grant got paid. So
he paid in all capitals, brother.
Yes.
E-A-I-D, spell it out.
So once those all fell down and came down to mid-level money, and I think my takeaway out of it is Jay Crowder wants to play for the Suns for the mid-level exception, because I believe he could go to a lot of other teams, and that's interesting to me that they went after a guy who really does fit everything that we could say that we know about what James Jones likes. And he wanted to come to the Suns as well. So if we're talking about reputation changing across the NBA, obviously the Chris Paul move pretty much solidified that, but this is just another one of those.
It's really good. Free agency was really interesting. And by interesting, I mean, I just sat at my desk at the office for most of my 8 hours working there and was just ready for madness. And we didn't even get a Sun leaving or anything. It was a whole lot of nothing. And by the end of the night, people are just about ready to panic in terms of the Suns not doing anything and all these names going off the board. And then by mid to early, I would say early afternoon, the signing broke like directly at noon. I know that because I went on Arizona Sports Saturday with Jordan Bird directly at noon. So that was fun to talk about what was quite literally my immediate reaction, because it broke about 30 seconds before I went on the air. So there was panic and stuff, but I think what I said last night was the way at which the market is trending right now is like very wild and unstable and unpredictable. And like, that's nowhere near where the Suns should be. And they clearly foresaw and did a good job of seeing that, like, Bertans and all these dudes that we were talking about potentially, like, they wouldn't have even been able to afford them if they would have gone completely under the cap. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to like look at a full board more. And I'm only saying this just because it's been like a very hectic couple of days and a week in general, but I can't for sure 100% say that this was the absolute right way for them to go about it in terms of over the cap versus under the cap, but it's trending much closer in the direction of over the cap than I thought it would be. We'll see how they finish out the rest of the roster. But yeah, everyone's kind of losing their mind. And then the Jay Crowder signing comes in and it just makes a ton of sense. I kept staring at this wing group and just thinking like, yeah, they could start the season. Sure. With these guys, with Bridges and Johnson, but that's 3 years of combined NBA experience, and Crowder adds 8. And he also adds over 70 career playoff games. He just played in the finals with Miami. He made an Eastern Conference Finals run with Boston a couple years ago. It's exactly what they needed for that specific group. And something we've talked about on this podcast, Kevin, forever, is that the big bulky wings, the Suns just never had a guy to defend those guys. And now they do.
That's why I was all in on Sadiq Bey in the draft. But that aside, I think it's really going to just shore up the rest of the roster construction, because people were, you know, really high on Cam Johnson, really high on Mikal, obviously, but there, I don't know how sustainable that is from a defensive perspective, from a rebounding perspective, even with DA, if DA is a monster. Just they all bring, and I think you wrote this, something different. And Jay Crowder gets the check mark, checks the box for guy who's going to go fight other dudes, defend really well, can defend wings and traditional power forwards most in some cases, just because he's a bigger body than you know, Cam and Mikal can't do that to the greatest degree, I would say. Mikal can get away with it because of his length. That's freaky, but I don't know. It's just, it makes a lot of sense. And when we go back to the salary cap stuff, it's, I think I said it, they're being cheaper by being over the cap.
Right.
If they had gone and signed an $18 million per year guy, even if, you know, let's say Gallo or Grant, whomever, Bertans even would take that money to play for this team, then you would just have to, you would be in trouble because you would have renounced, you know, guys like Javon, Dario. You wouldn't have bird rights with anyone. So then you're basically working with vets minimums to fill out a good chunk of your roster. So I think people got confused about what over the cap meant in that regard. It's keeping the roster balanced by bringing more guys back. As of right now, that looks like Dario and Javon. And they have a biannual that they can use that's like almost $4 million per year if they want to use that. So there's not going to be any big splash unless they make some trades or sign in trades or something like that. But
yeah, that's where people are still. David Nash has been saying that like they could hypothetically sign and trade Baines to Miami, and then that would maintain their mid-level exception, I believe. They could do some crazy stuff like that. But that's, Kevin, where you start to get into tax territory, and I don't think that's coming for this team. So,
yeah, I mean,
expectations.
Yeah, and they're going to be bumping. When we did the math earlier, I'd have to go back and look at it again, but they're going to be a little bit below it. And then even when you're mid-season, you got to get some vets minimums if there are injuries or whatever. Then you start pushing into that. So I wouldn't expect them to go into it. I think we had clear expectations of why they were operating over the cap. And again, that's because you have a different mid-level exception that's much larger than you would if you were under the cap. So that in that way, they are spending more money. So they kind of chose something that's in between, you know, big splash and being cheap. Jay Crowder is, I think, a really good, when you talk about the value, a quality signing there.
Yeah, I phrased it a certain way when I wrote it, and I don't think we're going to go on much of an extensive breakdown here of Jay Crowder's game. If you do want that, please go to ArizonaSports.com. Thought I did a fairly tidy job of explaining the type of player he is, and I probably like boosted up his plus what he does well more than someone else would, and that's just because they need this type of guy who completely understands where to be at defense at all times, knows about the multiple efforts it takes for every defensive possession, and he understands how to function in an offense like this. The coolest stat that I found was that Crowder's not a guy who averages over 2 assists a game in his career, but he rarely turns the ball over. And when you look at his turnover numbers specifically, they were the best in offenses where he moved the ball a lot. He played in Boston for a couple of years. I looked up the stats. They were a top 5 to 10 team in passes per game. Utah was top 5 in the league when he was there. And then Miami, of course, is a top half team. This season, they actually averaged the same amount of passes identically, like 292.4 this season as the Suns did. And his turnover numbers were the best on those teams. And you watch the tape of some of his assists, and he just makes quick decisions, doesn't really think about it too much. And there are simple ball rotations that can be made when you just see it and it's there. I don't know how else to really explain it besides like not hesitating and making the right play. It's always going to be there when a defense is kind of scrambling, and he's really good at some of them. There were a couple of passes that I found in there and put in the story where you can just picture it, both situations with DeAndre Ayton. If 3 defenders collapse on DeAndre around the rim and he kicks it out, which he loves to do, Crowder will be there, and Crowder will make the extra pass to the guy that's open when the first closeout comes to him. That's something he did all the time in Miami. We saw that throughout the postseason, really. And I pointed out some options where he just, like, he understands elite 3-point shooter Duncan Robinson next to him, so he's going to understand Book next to him and like Cam Johnson next to him and getting them the ball and just getting it to a better shooter than him, because he's going to be the worst shooter on the floor when he's out there, no matter who he's out there with. And then there are other options where there's just a little bit of space for Bam Adebayo from like 10 to 14 feet or whatever, and he just quickly taps it in there to him when the defender is kind of still under the rim a little bit. And Adebayo like was quick with the ball, and DeAndre is also quick with that in terms of finding his shot. So I think that his the 0.5 aspect of his game is the one thing I would talk about here the most. And then defensively, not a guy who's going to make an all defense team anymore. He's not a guy who can completely shut someone down in the way that we saw like Mikal really, really limit guys in the bubble. But he is basically going to be a connector in this defense because Mikal is going to play an all defense level. I think DeAndre has more than enough potential to play at that level. And then Chris Paul has been one of the best, if not the best, defensive point guard in the league for the past decade. And you put those four guys together next to Book, who in the bubble showed when the effort's all there, he understands and grinds through the possessions he has to be an average defender. Doesn't that sound like a top 10 defense in the league to you, Kevin? Those five guys starting together? Like, it does to me.
Yeah, the starting lineup's going to have really great balance on both sides. I think that's the biggest takeaway is we got upgrades defensively at two spots that you really need it. Like, Mikal couldn't do everything himself. So you're protecting Book to a huge degree now with that starting lineup. Like, he's the worst defender, and then who out of that group can you say is bad? Like, no one. I don't think any of those guys you would say are average. I think they're all over average or, you know, at one point Chris Paul was elite. He's lost foot speed and all that a little bit, but he's still really, really good. So to me, that's where you look at this team as being different because I was pretty surprised about the defense that they played this past year more than offense, I think. I think I saw what Monty was doing. It was like, okay, I can buy, like, with Book and DA, this is going to be a good offensive team. But they were a pretty good defense at their strongest moments. It was inconsistent. And with a roster that just didn't have dudes, like, Mikal, DA was really good. And obviously he can get better. But after that, it was kind of like Ricky's fine and smart about it. But I was impressed with how Monty coached them up. So I'm excited to watch this starting group, especially the bench. We'll see.
Crowder switchable too. That's the thing. He's not fast, but he's never been fast. So when you're not fast for your entire career, you understand little things like, oh, I've just got a chest bump every single time I defend guys, and he's more than willing to do that. And the joke I made in the piece is a lot of guys don't defend with their chest because it sucks and hurts, but he doesn't care. He's just a warrior, a boss man 99, the AOL handle that he's got. I love it. So I think he can switch a bit, and that's where you looked at like Millsap, Bertans, obviously Jeremy Grant would have filled in, but like Gallinari, and like there's no way to be a defensively versatile team defensively with those guys. But that five, like, if Book's matched up on the four, like, Book can battle a bit, and Crowder's on the two. You kind of get what I'm saying? Like, it's they can really go up and down, and obviously, like, DeAndre's switchability, I guess Chris is, like, the only one you would hesitate with, but I think that's, like, an important thing. That's, like, a strong starting five, too. If you look at every guy at their position, Mikal is really the only one where you hesitate, and I just really like how it completely puts together their starting lineup. If you're suggesting that Cam's going to start or Dario's going to start or whatever, I don't see it. I just think this is like it perfectly puts the group together. Like I said, you got anything more really on the signing, Kevin? It's pretty cut and dry. It's just really good. Like, it's yes, it's probably going to be an overpay eventually, if not like right away. But you look at what the other deals are around the league right now, and if Crowder's making like $10, $11 million in that third year, maybe it hurts you like a smidge when you're looking at free agency and stuff in 2022. But man, they really needed a presence like this, especially. I did not expect them to replace someone in terms of toughness and edge for Kelly. And that's another element of this we shouldn't go past. Like, no one can replace Kelly, but it's like, it's a close match. Like, it's not, in terms of just locker room and edge, it's still really far away. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't expect them to find someone who could even like we could even have a conversation with over this, you know, in free agency, and he's one of them.
Yeah, I think that what rounds out the starting lineup also rounds out the bench. I mean, we were hoping and thinking that the Suns could make a big splash with like the third guard, and that might be tough now just because of what's available and the money, but look at the bench. It's if you have Dario back, if you have Jalen Smith, if you have Cam in the front court, those are three pretty good shooters to space things. If you have Javon Carter, he was their best three-point shooter, I think, all last year. And then Cam Payne obviously shot really well. If he is your backup point guard, that's probably not ideal, but it's offensively a promising second unit, I would say, just from a pure shooting perspective.
Yeah, I'm still going to need the third guard. Last year was really troubling, and I know campaign and all this stuff, but I'll just phrase it more now. Like, campaign will need to prove a lot, I think. Gambo tweeted about 10-15 minutes ago, recording this Saturday afternoon, by the way, should have said that earlier, but he tweeted that they might not even use their biannual this year, which is, again, it depends on who's there. If you can't find the right guard, then don't pay him, obviously. But that's really the only thing I stare at with this team. I'll just say this out loud. I IM'd it to you as a joke, but if really everything comes together for this team the way it should, and what I mean by that is Chris Paul still playing at an all-star level, Book being as good and probably better than he was last year, like he has been every single year, the expected growth of the young players. So I think Mikal needs to be better next year. Cam needs to be better next year, and DeAndre certainly among them needs to be better next year. And you get what you got last year out of these other vet pieces or the other role player pieces. I'll say Crowder's included in that like third group, where get what you expect out of him, Dario, Javon, and Payne, or whoever the backup lead is. If DeAndre and Mikal, I think the two fluctuating points for this team now the most, because I'm just like so certain of Devin being at the level that he's going to be at, is Paul and how great he truly is. Like, he's going to be better than Rubio was no matter what. But if he's at an all NBA level again next year, that's certainly something that could change things. But if you get just that huge jump out of Mikal that we've been like slowly had teased to us for the past few seasons, maybe if Cam makes that jump off the bench, and then the big one, if DeAndre Ayton makes the jump that most players at his talent level should in the second or third year of their career, if you look at guys who are in his caliber of just pure talent, they make a huge jump in either their second or third year. And you could argue, Kevin, honestly, with how low we were on his defense at U of A, that he's already made that big jump with how great he's been defensively compared to what we probably would have expected two years ago. But I still think there's obviously a mentality change and a jump to come with him. I think that if they get that one of those two things, either Chris Paul's at an all NBA level or one of these three young guys improves drastically, which they could, I think we're talking about a team that could win more than one playoff series and maybe even go further than that. That's a large, large jump to make for a team that just hasn't made the playoffs in a decade. And that's where I'll cite like, try to slowly back away from the audacious claim that I just made, but I'm not completely crazy to think that, right? Like, if DeAndre is if he's playing like an all-star, I shouldn't say putting up numbers, but if DeAndre plays consistently, and then if Paul plays near an all-star all NBA level, those two things, basically, I think that they can be that type of team where they're a top four seed. You expect them to win one playoff series, and maybe they could even challenge further beyond that.
Yeah, it's not crazy. I mean, I think I stopped short of saying Western Conference Finals, I guess, like Kendrick Perkins said, just because I think it does. There are going to be growing pains, I think. Last year, there were obviously not many, and that's considering DA was out most of that start of the year. But there is a lot of turnover, like, for key pieces too. And I think you got to look at that. You got to also look at, sorry, 8-0 bubble Suns, but there were three or four games where the other team was just not themselves. But I totally think that they definitely are a playoff team and not just like a before what last week, I would have said maybe they're a 10 seed. We talked about that. Now I think they definitely are going to be 8 or better, but
yeah,
4, if there are a few injuries and things don't go right, I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The fourth seed is not super out of the realm of possibility, even if, you know, things aren't going 100% well on the Suns' end. I mean, I think they could they could get there even if DA doesn't make a huge leap and stuff like that.
The best way to put it is ceiling, right? Like the ceiling for their season is making it to the Western Conference Finals or even further. Like that is actually a realistic ceiling in my opinion. Now, is it one of the most expected outcomes? No. But it's a ceiling for this team, which is just crazy to say out loud and just think at some point I'm going to screenshot the records of those 4 years when they lost like 55, 58, 63 and all those and just be like, this was like 4 to 6 years ago. And now we're talking about this team that could make the Western Conference Finals if everything comes together perfectly. Just about perfectly. Yeah. I agree with you though. I believe that they are, and this is what I wrote in my thing. I think they are undoubtedly a top six team in the West. Even if you just take average outcomes for everyone and stuff, I think they're top six. We'll roll through the teams here in the second half of the podcast and kind of reset where everyone's gone. Free agency is mostly done. There's a lot left in terms of trades, I think, still to come. But again, teams got to move. It's November 21st and training camp starts December 1st. So there's going to be some urgency to get stuff done in a couple of days. But I think they've certified themselves as – I think I'm a little bit higher than you, but it's undoubtedly like they're a playoff team next year. If you're picking playoff teams next year and you don't pick the Suns, you're dumb. Yeah. You're just not well informed. You don't understand how good Booker and Ayton and all these other guys are. Because that person picking that probably understands how good Chris Paul is, but they don't understand all these pieces that they've probably only seen on highlights and stuff.
Do you remember sorry, this is kind of going off, but
no, you're good.
Do you remember 2 years ago we were like, how many players on the Suns are like NBA rotation players?
Right.
and we were like, four, three at some points. And now you look and it's like, there's probably 8, 9, 10.
My mentions are going to get a little bit more silly with the team gaining more attention for being better. I understand that. But at the same time, like, I had to back away from the keyboard a couple of times when people were looking at that list I tweeted out this morning of the names out and just saying, no, I don't want any of those guys. It's like, do you remember when this team had two good players for an entire season, literally two, and they had like you said, like five over a 3 year run, probably? Like, that's it. They had TJ, Devin, Kelly when he came, and then Mikal and DeAndre eventually. Like, do you guys remember that? I'm sorry. luckily we don't have to go through that, but it's crazy how fast expectations, and again, like I talk about that all the time in sports, but this is a great example because some people were looking super picky in this free agent class. I'm like, man, you guys just don't remember how horrible it was apparently. Like, you guys have already moved on to bigger and better things. That's my rant out of the way. So with what I was saying, we're going to reset the West here as best as we can in order to keep discussing the Suns and look at them in the pecking order of the West. I saw some tweets out there that are putting them like third already or fourth in the West. I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far. There are a couple of teams here where Kevin and I tried our best to roll through all the signings and trades that happened up to this point. If we missed one or two, we apologize and you guys will be sure to correct us, but we tried our best to go through every single team and kind of put together what has happened thus far, just so as you guys are daydreaming about where the Suns could finish, I think this is like an exercise that me and you both enjoyed doing, and we'll kind of like talk through it now. You ready to start and roll through these?
Yeah, I didn't do the exercise. You pretty much did it, so thanks. As I sat here,
you helped me a lot. Okay. It was mostly by listening to me talk to myself, but you did help me and say yes or no when I needed like the second juice.
You did a great job, Kellen.
Thank you, bud. Thanks, I appreciate it. So I will just say the order we're going to do these teams in is my opinion, and you can kind of chirp in here where you want to in terms of what we're going to go with. But in my opinion, there are still three teams that are undoubtedly like you have to put them above the Suns. And then from there, I think it becomes a bit of an argument, but we'll get into that. So starting with the Lakers, they lost Rondo, who went to Atlanta, Avery Bradley, who went to Miami, and Danny Green was a part of the OKC trade, which brought in Schroeder. They signed Montrezl Harrell, and they signed Wes Matthews. They're still waiting on KCP, who was like a low-key important part of their team and is about to get that clutch bag for like the fifth time in his career. But they're like undoubtedly like the best team in the league, right, Kevin? Especially with how they approach free agency here. I thought they did an excellent job. Even if Montrez is like a little bit worse than he was in the regular season. Like, he was still he was a sixth man of the year.
I think that energy pop guy, they didn't really have that. I guess Dwight Howard was that.
JaVale, yeah.
JaVale was that in, like, weird energies that were either good or really bad. But, no, I like that move. Dennis is obviously a crazy upgrade, I think. I like that they kind of built out with some more unique, like, role players, because I just looked at the other roster last year and I was like, I don't know how they're going to win a championship. And I was very wrong, but I think they got a lot better.
Right. So just to put that together, you've got likely, I don't know how they're going to do the starting lineup, but basically, like, the group is, you've got probably like LeBron, Wesley Matthews, KCP, assuming he returns, Davis and Harrell, that's a five. And then, like, accentuating pieces, you've got Schroeder, Kuzma, Caruso, Waiters and McGee. Like, that is a pretty excellent team. Still the best team in the league, in my opinion. We move on to Denver, which was, boy, were they in a strange spot, because according to multiple reports, Jeremy Grant got offered 3-year 60 mil by both Detroit and Denver, and he accepted Detroit because he wants the ball more. Oh, you're going to get the ball in Detroit, Jeremy. Have fun with that. They lost Grant and they lost Plumlee, who also, Mason, went to Detroit. They added back Paul Millsap, which was huge, because we were sitting here about an hour or two ago and wondering, like, oh, man, are they about to lose Millsap? Will they, like, drop down here? They're so good, and they're waiting on Torrey Craig, who I believe during our podcast they just made him unrestricted. They got rid of his tender, I believe.
Yes.
I don't know, man. When guys make leaps in the playoffs, I think it's so legit, and Jamal's a star. Jokic is a star. They've got two just stars. And good pieces around them still. Do you agree?
Yep. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. is going to probably get...
He's the guy, right? Yeah.
Reel it in. And when he matures, that's just going to add even more oomph. So I don't think they needed to panic and overpay Grant. I don't think they needed to, you know, worry a whole lot about losing those, like, Plumlee, a guy who is really important, but, like, You can't pay a guy that much to when you have crossover with Jokic and stuff like that. And Millsap's back. Yeah.
Keep an eye on how they put together just, like, depth in general, because this is not as deep of a team as they once were, especially if Torrey Craig's gone. Right now they've got Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Millsap, and Jokic starting. I can't see Millsap coming off the bench, even if Porter's crazy. And then, but Porter's coming off the bench, and Monte Morse is coming off the bench, someone who you and I have loved for years. But then after that, it's all of a sudden Bol Bol, Zeke Nnaji, RJ Hampton, and then if Torrey Craig's back. So
that's still, if they hit
it's
on...
It's still great. Don't get me wrong.
We didn't even mention, isn't Campazzo on that team?
Right, yeah.
I got really excited. Was he the very first, free agent signing was Facundo Campazzo, who, by the way, is like a 5'9", passing wizard who I think I remember him just killing the United States in some Olympics that they probably lost and shouldn't have, but
you can't take Milos away from us and then expect anyone else to fill the spot that he left. But this guy's going to do a Campazzo's going to do a pretty nice attempt of it. I still think that's still a top two, top three team in Denver. And then if MPJ is just better, then holy smokes, cause he's pretty good already. The next team is the Clippers, and I think maybe this is where you start to argue a bit, but I mean, they've still got Paul George, and make your Paul George jokes, whatever. They've still got Kawhi. They haven't really done a lot in the offseason. It's been not surprising necessarily, but in terms of the shifts, not really a lot there. They lost Montrezl Harrell, who we mentioned earlier. Jermichael Green went to, where did he go, Kevin? Did he leave yet? He left, right? I thought we were going to get through this and I was going to remember everything. He went to the Nuggets, who we just rolled through and forgot Jermichael Green completely. So that, by the way, that cleans up what I just said in terms of the depth down low. That's the perfect backup five for them for Jokic. Yeah,
never mind. The Nuggets are really good. But no, I mean, the Clippers picked up Luke Kennard, so that trades off the table for the Suns, in case you were wondering. Adding that extra ball handler, I think, is a big deal. So that's good. Their depth is a kind of a concern, especially if Paul George and Kawhi get hurt, which, you know, they've done that in the past. So we'll see about that team. But I will also see if Ty Lue is a good coach, because I am not 100% sure. Because when you have LeBron James on your team, like, you're going to look good.
First team all overpay will feature Marcus Morris. He got 4 years, $64 million. Yikes. He did not play well for the Clippers at all, but he was great for the Knicks. So if he lands more towards his Knicks version than he was for the Clippers, then that's okay, I guess. But they're short, like you said. They've got Beverly, Lou Will, Paul George, Kennard, Leonard, Morris, Zubac, Patrick Patterson. That's like a solid, solid eight guys right there. But then after that, there's no one. David Locke, who is the we're taking his tweets in terms of depth charts here. Joakim Noah ? Is what he has behind Zubac. He doesn't. Who knows? but that's, I mean, it's Kawhi Leonard. It's Paul George. Like, they outscore teams by like 13 points per 100 possessions when Kennard's or Leonard's net rating last year was absurd. Like, they're going to demolish teams in the regular season as they should. In my opinion, Kevin, I'm not willing to put them up here, but I will. I think the Lakers are in their own tier, and then after that, it's Denver and the Clippers. But in my opinion, you can talk me into Portland here. That might sound crazy, but when you just kind of roll through their team, they've just got a really good, deep team. They lost Trevor Ariza, but they added Robert Covington, Enes Kanter, and Derek Jones Jr. Derek Jones Jr. got the full mid-level exception. Good for him. But when you look at this team, you can understand why they paid him, because he was just like the last missing piece for them, really. And then they brought back Rodney Hood, and they brought back Carmelo Anthony. I did not mean to like pause there to make fun of Carmelo. There was something in my throat. I like Carmelo right now in this role. Okay, so starting five, you've got Dame, CJ, Robert Covington, Zach Collins, Yusuf Nurkic. And then behind that, you've got Anfernee Simons, Gary Trent, Rodney Hood, Derek Jones Jr., Nasir Little, Kanter, and Carmelo. Like, that is a – I know I mentioned Nasir Little, which probably might not be fair, but and Kanter is what he is. But Simons has some stuff to prove, but Trent looked legit as at least a shooter in the bubble. Like, they're at least like really deep eight guys, and it could extend to like 10 or 11. And you've got Dame.
I think if they get away from making Dame score 60 just to get into the playoffs, and they get, you know, Zach Collins and Dame starts trusting other guys more, which he should, because it does look like it has a lot of firepower on paper, then yeah, that team's really good. And they have some athletic bodies too. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's a sneaky good defensive team, even if you throw Kanter in there on second unit.
You want a hot take?
Yeah, go for it.
They should go get Bradley Beal. They should offer CJ.
Oh.
They should offer Simons. Maybe even throw in Nasir Little and a first-round pick or two. I think they need – like, Dame deserves a run at a championship. I think this is going to be their best opportunity to do so. And they're so deep that they can afford to lose one of those guys. Now, you'd need to add a veteran point guard to replace Simons or something like that. But, I mean, Dame and Beal together, that's just crazy. With Hood off the bench, too. I mean, they're your three ball handlers, actually. And then you got Trent shooting still. And if Derek Jones Jr. is capable – him and Covington and Hood, like, that's enough on the wing as well. Collins, Nurkic, Kanter. I think that's something they should really – they're my favorite Bradley Beal. I've been waiting to find, like, a good Bradley Beal team. That's an awesome Bradley Beal team. I love it.
Yep, that is a good idea. Sign me up.
Okay, so I just talked myself even more into including them with those teams and that kind of being a certified top four, just out of respect to Dame Lillard and the awesome, like, top 5 to 10 player he is in the league right now. After that, this is where you can argue the Suns at any point for me. I think you could argue them fourth if you want to talk about what Portland doesn't do well and stuff like that. But this is the cutoff here. And basically, in my opinion, Kevin, I think the Suns are 5, 6, 7 with Dallas and Utah. And then after that, I have no idea what happens here. I think Golden State actually deserves to be in there with Steph. I've been saying that for a while now. I think that's a clear 5 to 7, 5 to 8, because Golden State's such a mystery. Dallas is going to be really great. Still pretty good. They added Josh Richardson and James Johnson. They lost DeLon Wright, Seth Curry, and Justin Jackson, and they brought back Trey Burke. They are looking at Luka, Tim Hardaway, Josh Porzingis, and Dwight Powell as the five. They can also mix in Dorian Finney-Smith there if they want to sit Richardson or Hardaway. They got Jalen Brunson. They have Johnson, we mentioned, Boban, Maxi Kleba, They drafted Tyrell Terry and Josh Green, who might be able to help right away. Specifically, I think Terry as a shooter is someone to keep an eye on without a doubt. It's a pretty good team, Kevin. I think that they deserve to be in this group. Do you agree?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of waiting to see. I know Josh Richardson's a really good player, but I'm interested to see what else they can do with that team.
Well, he looked a step slow, too, in Philly. It was like, what exactly is going on here? He was an awful fit, don't get me wrong, but there were parts of watching him, too, where you were like, is he okay? Is he hurt? And whenever you look at that and they're maybe not hurt, that's when red flags start to go, you know?
If Dwight Powell comes back, I don't even remember what his injury was, but that one was killer. I mean, if they got an elite rim roller, that would kind of change to me how I look at that team.
We can go.
He's really good, but still, like, if you went out and got someone else, that's
Richardson is like the perfect player in theory to put next to Luka if he is what he was in Miami. But with that being said, this is, in my opinion, it's still very clearly just one guy. And then Kristaps has to stay healthy until he has to stay healthy for like a full season or two before I can even like put him confidently in like a big two or a big three anywhere. Like, I just don't think you can put him in there. So until that happens, you're still missing clearly like the next star or two.
Since you did the Bradley Beal thing with the Blazers, somehow the Mavericks have enough to trade for Blake Griffin.
Oh,
and that would make them like super interesting to me.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know why I just decided that's a good idea, but do it.
No, I like it. I dig it. I don't know what they could exactly provide Detroit, but we've also learned that Detroit's front office is not smart. So maybe you could trick them and just show them a magic trick or two and then they'll get distracted. What you could distract them with is Boban, the ultimate center. They love centers. Just Boban for Blake straight up, who says no, not Detroit. Utah was really boring. They signed Derek Favors, brought him back. He's good at basketball, better than Ed Davis, who they lost, and they retained Jordan Clarkson. So now Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Bojan Bogdanović, Rudy Gobert off the bench. They've got Clarkson, Ingles, Niang, and Favors. That's a pretty good basketball team, Kevin. I think we might be sleeping on them a little bit.
Depends on what Mike Conley does. If Mike Conley finds like old Mike Conley somewhere in there, that's still in the realm of possibility. So, I mean, they're going to be there, but I think they're in that tier with Dallas where the Suns are right now, that kind of second tier, third tier, I guess.
I agree. Yeah, I have nothing more to add. Golden State, to me, I've been just shouting from the rooftops, do not disrespect Steph Curry. They're a playoff team. With that being said, Kevin, when you look at their roster, there are question marks there just beyond depth. Like the guys that they have to rely on, you have to ask questions about. They added Kelly Oubre in a trade, basically a trade exception for a first-round pick, and they drafted Dennis Wiseman, who is really the only rookie we're going to project here in that listing because he's uber-talented kid, huge body. Of course, Klay Thompson
out for...
Did you say
Dennis?
Did I say Dennis?
You said Dennis, I think.
Oh, God.
My brain. I'm out of bad ears.
His name is James. I definitely said Dennis, by the way. I caught it that time in like the USC-UCLA thing. Okay, anyway, they lost Klay. He's out for the year, and now we're still waiting on them. They have a move or two left to make in free agency, I would certainly assume, because if you look at their team, it's Steph, Oubre, Wiggins, Green, Wiseman. Then after that off the bench, I would probably say Kevon Looney, Eric Pascal. And then after that, you're wondering like, okay, how legit was Jordan Poole's rookie year? Damian Lee, how much can we buy into that? Is Nico their backup point guard right now? It certainly looks like it. Marquise Chris, again, like how much are you relying on him? It's a really shorthanded team. Do you think we're putting them too low or does this seem about right?
I think it's fair. Wiggins Kelly fit is going to be a struggle, I think, unless those guys are shooting really
It's bad.
Yeah. And they're just going to, I mean, Steve Kerr is going to have his hands full getting those guys to play the right way. And just their style in general is going to be so different than it was when they won those titles. Like Wiseman's going to have to be a huge part of it, right? Like you have to kind of rely on him like the Suns relied on DeAndre Ayton his first year just to have a competent offense and to help Steph out because Draymond's not going to be scoring more than 15 points.
Well,
he shouldn't. So
he was the guy that I was going to bring up. I think I've landed somewhere between Draymond Green is not a top 10, top 15 player in the league when he was rolling, when he was amazing at what he did. And Draymond is not like trash like people believe him to be. I was somewhere like kind of in the middle. This is exactly the type of situation where he needs to prove that he is still like an all-star caliber player. And yeah. You're not going to get away with saying like, oh, he's like older now and all this stuff. No, that's horse crap in my opinion. He needs to prove that he's still a top 20, top 30 player in the league like people were touting him to be, because this is the exact situation where every single night he is – a 9 out of 10 nights, he's going to need to be their second best player. And like maybe a night or two, he's third or fourth or fifth, like every other guy, but he needs to like, it needs to be a big two with him and Steph. And then that's where you get Oubre as your third guy. And then, like you said, that's where Wiseman comes in. But I think this is all about Draymond really more than anyone else.
That's an interesting point. And yeah, it's not about scoring either. It's like how he's doing the little things and letting Kelly scoop up 20 points and let Andrew Wiggins work through his inefficiencies and obviously help Steph be Steph. And Draymond's going to play a huge part in James Wiseman's development too, especially when you talk about defense. Like we have so little to work off of on his short college career that I have no idea what to expect. But if he's as good as we think he might be talent-wise, and they can get him up to speed, especially on defense, then that's going to be Draymond's. Like, he's going to be that guy who's telling him what to do. So I think that's a huge point you made.
And we should just say, we kind of over-taught, like, just through Wiggins, just, like, away from the conversation entirely. In my opinion, this is, like, highest floor, lowest ceiling team, highest floor and ceiling, like, the gap between floor and ceiling is higher for this team than any other than league, because you've got Kelly, you've got Wiggins, you've got Wiseman, and you've got Draymond. I think those four guys swinging enough in certain directions are just going to dictate how far this team goes. Obviously, Steph is one that some people throw in because he hasn't played for so long. All-time great players like that, I'm sorry, they just earned the benefit of the doubt for me. Like, Chris Paul is going to have to play at a much lower level than he has his entire career before I start entertaining the fact that he could start regressing significantly. And the same thing goes for Steph. I'm just going to need to see it. I'm not willing to go off the 15-game sample size we got earlier in the year. But I think that honestly, if those guys click enough and like Wiggins finally figures it out to at least some kind of extent, which it looked like he might have a little bit at points last season, Kelly snaps into place easily enough, and then Wiseman is just easily rookie of the year. Draymond's back at that level. I think that's a top four team in the West again. But if some of those pieces fall apart, if Wiseman's not ready, you're starting Looney, and you're like playing Chris over Wiseman or whatever. Like, if that starts to go south, Draymond's not an impact guy anymore. Now you're talking about a team that doesn't make the playoffs easily. It's really, they're the most fascinating team for me out of this whole group, Kevin.
It's been a while since we saw them be competent. So, I mean,
right, they were terrible.
2020 was long, but they were not there well before this began.
Yeah, speaking of being long, we would not bore you with the 45 minutes we would need to take to explain what New Orleans and Oklahoma City have done, and like Houston and all that kind of stuff, and other teams. I think I'll just quickly add Memphis in here. They brought back De'Anthony Melton, and that's pretty much all they've done so far. They've probably got some moves left to make, but with that in mind, it's Ja, Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jonas is probably the starting five again. But this is a deep team. Remember, they got Justice Winslow, and he could just be a huge part for their team. They've got Tyus Jones. They've got Melton, who they brought back, like I said, Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane, Xavier Tillman, Gorgui Dieng, Killian Tilly, if he's healthy, Brandon Clark, I didn't mention. Like, this is maybe one of the deepest teams in the league if they get some of those rookies to be instant impact guys right away, and Justice Winslow turns out to be a good player. But do you put them in the playoff conversation at all, Kevin? I still feel like they're a tier below the eight teams we just mentioned.
I think that they are, just because I expect Ja Morant to get a lot better. I expect Jaren Jackson to keep doing his thing and improving. And like you said, that depth is pretty impressive. The most exciting thing I saw on like basketball tour yesterday was Ja Morant booping a giraffe that was like 6 feet tall, by the way. Go look that up.
Okay. We will do, Kevin. We will look it up.
New name Orleans. Is Ja Raff.
New Orleans is really the last team we kind of have to get to here, because Houston signed Christian Wood, which appears to indicate they still want to win, but they have James Harden, Russell Westbrook to figure out. The Covington thing to me was like, oh, they're selling. And it's like, no, they got a great return on Covington. And then they got a great deal on Christian Wood. So maybe they're not quite done yet. We're just putting a big question mark around them. And that's someone we'll have to come back to here in a week or two time when we know exactly what they are. Same thing with Oklahoma City, but they're probably going to be bad because they just keep trading players for draft picks. And eventually you're just going to have draft picks. New Orleans, I don't know what to make of this team, Kevin. This is what I have the starting five as. Eric Bledsoe, J.J. Redick, Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Steven Adams. And then off the bench, you've got Kyra Lewis, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Josh Hart, Mieli, and Jackson Hayes. Kenrich Williams might be back too. Frank Jackson might be back. I don't know, man. Oh, I didn't list Lonzo. Lonzo is the first guard off the bench probably in that situation. Or he's starting. I don't really know, but... It's Zion, right? I mean, same thing as last year, but they're a playoff team if Zion's as good as he was at the start of the season, right? I think they are.
I'm worried about Zion.
Me too. Oh, me too. But if he averages like 24 and 11.
He needs to play and not be restricted minutes-wise. I think
correct. This
is going to be a very – especially with the weird off season, I'm just like so worried about his development and them getting him like in shape and ready to go and managing injuries and all that stuff. Because beyond him, that roster's weird. I think Steven Adams helps a lot, like just stability. I don't know how you're going to manage that guard rotation at all, but they have talent. Don't get me wrong, but it's just going to be a lot of figuring stuff out in not very much time.
I should have prefaced that with like, I'm not picking them to make the playoffs, but I'm just saying they're in our little groupthink activity here just because Zion was a top 20, top 25 player in the league when he was effective. He was really, really good. So there's a lot going there. How does Bledsoe fit into all that? Usually not quite the plug-and-play type where you just snap him into any team and he fits in instantly.
Yeah,
that's going to be quite interesting. But there's pieces there. Minnesota sucks. We're not going to talk about them. When they threw Malik Beasley $60 million, I was like, all right, Cat's gone, and they're probably not going to be a thing for 7 years. Spurs and Kings, we'll see. I don't know. They have pieces, but we shouldn't talk about them because they pretty much haven't done anything yet. Jakob Poeltl is back. They brought back Eubanks, San Antonio, I think, but they're in that grouping probably with New Orleans with, if you treat New Orleans like you should, and Kevin was saying like Zion's a complete wild card. That's probably where those teams are. And then Memphis and Golden State are kind of in that above tier. I feel like that's a pretty solid grouping. Really long way of saying, Kevin, the Suns are probably one of the six best teams in the West. Do you sit with me there? That's where I have them. Top seven, I guess is what I said, right? Those seven teams.
Yeah, I'm there with you now. Cool. Jake Crowder did it.
He did it indeed. Yeah. So yeah, Lakers, Nuggets, Clippers, I think like without a doubt above them. And I'd give you Portland if you really tried to strong arm me on it. But then after that, I think it's Dallas, Utah, Suns. And then there's another pretty steep drop off. So in terms of things to keep an eye on and kind of like in my, I wanted to have the discussion out loud for my own brain. Really keep an eye on Houston because if they keep some of this together, which it seems like maybe they might have to anyway, that's eight real, real good teams. And one of those things where like the difference between five and eight could only be a game or two or four and eight or whatever. Like it could be one of those types of deals. And then just keep an eye on how those other teams dress. Like if the Spurs, Kings, we mentioned, like Dallas being like a random Blake Griffin team. Does one of those big trades, does it affect things in the West? We've still got a lot more left that can change.
Yep.
All right, friend. That was fun. A little Saturday edition of the pod. I think this is the first time in our podcast's 4 or 5 year history that we've done four in a week.
It's hitting big. It turns out when the Suns are relevant, people care a lot.
And we can talk about it. Yeah, quite the week. We will be back next week. I want to preface and say if they make a big trade or something, like we'll be back and we'll talk about it. But I think they're done for the most part. We'll be back to just completely wrap up free agency and the other big moves that are clearly like we we're trying to forecast. There's a lot left to shift in the league right now for the next week or so. And we'll kind of recap that. And then the week after that, Kevin, they go to training camp. That is literally the week after next. Next week, we should be hearing from Chris Paul, probably Jalen Smith again. We're going to hear from James Jones on free agency too. So there's a lot to get to. And then we're, like I said, training camp this season. We got preseason games in 3 weeks. Oh man, get ready. I'm ready.
Get your rest, everyone.
Yeah. Oh man, am I going to sleep tonight? Because I need, if I don't sleep now, it's never going to happen. All right, everyone. Hope you get yourself well rested too, because you're going to need to have your troll games at 100 on Twitter, because the Suns are relevant enough to where people just like sun you with like three words. You know that? Like whenever like people would bring up the Suns in a conversation, they get immediately roasted and they couldn't say anything back. You're going to be able to say stuff back now. It's exciting times. Get ready. We are, and we'll see you next week. See ya.